Have you ever wondered about miracles? Would you like to have your spirit uplifted by inspiring stories of the miraculous in everyday life? Expect Miracles does just that. Author Mary Ellen Angel Scribe shares a wonderful compilation of 70 gentle-hearted, true miracle stories sent to her by readers of her Miracles and Good News letter. A Christmas filled with miracles is also the result of people sharing miracles that have found their way into their lives. These inspirational and touching books are available now at angelscribe.com for just $15 plus shipping and will be personally autographed by Mary Ellen Angel Scribe. Expect Miracles and A Christmas Filled with Miracles make wonderful gifts and will open your eyes to the possibility that miracles do happen. Expect Miracles at angelscribe.com.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And as I came today to think about what should we discuss, and I hope that it becomes a discussion. So I really want to give the number. I'm going to take calls at 1:30, 1-877-876-5227. And you can check out more information by going to www.bbsradio.com. What I want to talk about today is, in my work lately as a spiritual reader and counselor and mystic, I have really been having a lot of feedback from people who are connected and have been in the Iraqi war or experienced that experience. People that are still over there, but people who are also coming back and dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome. And since Veterans Day just passed us by, and it's been on the media, and it's been in a lot of people's minds, I think this is a good time to talk about how we as spiritual beings can help aid these people who are coming back, the people who are there, and the whole process of dealing with the things that have gone on to the people who have had to experience war in any type of situation. And I want to talk about our American soldiers, but I also don't want to forget the people who have been victims of wars and the people who have fled to our country, because America is the melting pot, and it's not the first time that people have fled for freedoms and things that are very important in their minds. And the things that most wars, unfortunately, are fought over are disagreements and fears. Fears of being oppressed, often very well-founded because people have been tortured and killed, but also for the very freedom of religion, and that's why the United States was formed, actually, people fleeing for the right to worship and believe in what they want to believe in. And we are in a wonderful time where the freedom of religion and speech in America is really quite amazing, even though some will argue that some of our rights have been taken away. But as we talk today, I would like to talk about how can we, as family, friends, lovers, wives, clergy, just as spiritual people, how can we help those who are coming back from the experience of a war? One of the things I want to talk about today is that we, as I've talked to some of these people who have come back from the experience of the Iraqi war, they're in conflict, they're in spiritual conflict, because they've been raised in a, came into a world where they really, as spiritual beings, wanted to understand love and the dynamics of love and nurturing and caring for people. They were taught from a very young age to care for their brothers and sisters, to care for their parents, to care and be a responsible person and citizen. Even if they came from somewhat of a violent, maybe, background, even people who have, you know, were in a home where, you know, there was alcoholism, and so they became the protectors of the other kids, or trying to get out of the situation. So, by and large, we come in wanting to experience love and teach love and to protect others. And so it's easy for us as spiritual beings to be convinced into protecting our nation. The problem comes when that action actually happens, once you experience war and you have actually shot another human being, or unfortunately perhaps had to kill another human being. then there becomes this inner conflict. And they are also experiencing, of course, the flight or fright that comes with being under attack in any way. Anyone who has ever been under attack, whether through domestic violence or any form, you know, gang people have been attacked by gangs, any form where you've been attacked or aggression has been shown, they understand this flight or fright thing that takes possession of their beingness. Well, most of these young men and women who have been in the Iraqi war have endured over 18 months. Sometimes some of them are now on their second tour, and now some of them are on their third tour. Some of them are regular Army, Air Force, Navy, and other services, Marines. I don't want to leave anybody out. But some of them, of course, are National Guard. And I think the National Guard, you know, they expect to respond to emergencies in the United States. I really think in the back of their mind, a lot of them did not anticipate having to go to war. And so from all the wars, World War I, World War II, Vietnam, Korean conflict, Desert Storm, and, of course, now the Iraqi war, we have a lot of what we call the walking wounded. They've come back, many of them, in a strange dichotomy conflict. And as I talk to some of these people, returning soldiers, there's this interesting mindset. They're almost afraid. One very good friend of mine, happened to be a female who served in Iraq, said that when they came home, it was almost they had almost the fear of getting off the bus and meeting their loved ones. They wanted to, but there was this conflict that they are so changed. How are they going to be able to react and integrate into the family they left, because they're not the same person as when they left. So they actually, a lot of them, had a big fear of even getting off that bus to embrace their loved ones, to step from their family, their soldier family, into their regular family. And it's interesting, as I talked to a lot of these soldiers, I really found out that they live in two worlds, literally. And the world that is their comrades in arms, their soldier family, becomes a very dynamic family. They become their brothers and sisters, their protectors, they're watching their back. They form this very intricately odd connection. And so when they are leaving that family, and they form an incredible attachment to their guns, because they have been taught that that gun is really truly the difference between life and death. They sleep with it, they eat with it, and, you know, it becomes part of their whole persona. And as they come back here, and they often the first time, a few times they wake up, and, you know, they're madly looking for their gun because, you know, it should be there, and it's sort of their security blanket. Somehow it's become their spiritual whoopee and blanket, because they know as long as they've got that, you know, they can react, they can protect themselves and others. And so they're coming off this red alert, flight or fright. And to integrate back into, quote-unquote, normalness is very, very difficult. And I know that the services are trying to give them help into integrating. But I think really, truly, us as family can start developing ways to help them cope, to help bring them in, especially if we know that they're coming back, you know, the few months before they're coming back. And even while they're over there, it's very important to keep contact. And I'm not talking just emails, because emails are a quick, fast way, and everybody loves emails, don't get me wrong. But really, truly, guys, writing letters, sending things, keeping in touch is really, really important. Sending familiar things, which is interesting to me. We talked about this because I have done this for quite a while, ever since actually the beginning of the Iraqi war, but I did it before in Desert Storm, is I really believe as spiritual beings it's a good thing to adopt soldiers, and there's many ways you can do it. You can go on the computer to adoptasoldier.com, I think it is. You can talk to the Red Cross. You can ask friends or families in churches that have soldiers over there. There's lots and lots of ways to kind of be involved with someone who is in the armed forces. They really need that extra support. And they, you know, write them fun letters. Cut out things from the funny papers. Send things that keep them connected to you and to the family situation. If your family, you know, it's great to do things. A really amazing thing that a friend of mine did that I thought was such a cool idea, and she said, I started it, but I don't remember starting it, and came up with the idea. She said, Terry, you gave me this idea, and I go, I don't remember doing that. But she made up a board game that they could play, that she could play, they could play via sort of the internet. And they sent him, they made up a board, the kids made up a board, and they had cards and things, and you would roll dice, and you would go so many steps, and you would pull cards. And it would be cards like, what is Debbie doing? You know, what is the toughest subject that Debbie has in sixth grade? And then on the back of that card, there would be the answer. But they would have to guess, and they would kind of play this game sort of via the internet. I don't know all the details how it works, but I thought it was a great idea. Because one thing it did is it kept the father involved in the kids' lives. But the other thing it did is it informed him. They actually had things to talk about. Why is the math the difficult subject for Debbie? Whatever that was, the dynamics. The father now had interaction with what's going on in a daily way with his kids. They had cards about those kinds of questions. What's your favorite whatever, or gum, or whatever. It was very cute, very... You know, the kids made up their own cards. The mom typed them out, but the kids did different things and did drawings on it. So it really kept things interactive. Sending photos, really staying as connected as you can. Also, for those who are sending to people in Iraq for the holidays, if you're sending for Christmas, deadline is the 27th of November to guarantee it gets there before Christmas, my understanding is. So... And things that they really appreciate are candy. If it's candy, please put it in Ziploc bags so if it does get warm, it doesn't melt all over everything else that's in the package. And who someone said in one some very famous Christmas show, nothing says Christmas like gym socks. One of the things that when my friends were in Iraq, they said, send socks. The troops really appreciate socks. Why? They're in a hot desert country, and one of the most important things is to be able to protect their feet. And sometimes supplies of those particular things is not so easy. But think about very creative things. One of the things a friend of mine helped me, I'm putting a package together for someone right now to go over for Christmas. One of the things when my other friend was there, I said a Christmas tree, one of those little light-up Christmas trees, and she happened to say that that was the only one that they had in their particular area, and so they took it to the mess hall and plugged it in, and they were very excited that they had a Christmas tree. And it's things, you know, send some things they can leave behind for the next persons, too. I think that's very important. Sometimes it's just having something that gives a hint of the holidays. One of the things that I thought was very interesting, a group at a church, a Unity church, had the kids take puzzles, you know, puzzle parts that were missing pieces. And the kids glued these puzzles together, and they painted them, and they made a wreath. And then the kids all signed their names, and they sent it to some soldier. So there's lots of very creative ways that we can get involved to make a difference in the ones that are over there still, and to help integrate them into coming back home. Keeping them kind of abreast of what's going on at home is really important. Via some magazines and newspapers. It was funny because one time when I sent something, I wrapped up newspaper, crunched up newspaper to keep the object safe, and they had more fun with what was in the newspaper. I also think sending card games like Uno, crossword puzzle books, things that keep their minds occupied when they're not having to be out there on duty on red alert, something that brings them back into the moment. So if you have ideas that your family has found, things that you know perhaps your loved one who was serving, has served or is serving over there, appreciate it. Please call in and share those ideas with me at 1-877-876-5227 because it's important to come up with as many ideas as we can to help, especially not just during this season, but it happens to be fresh in my mind because I gave a speech about Veterans Day, and I really realized, and in the last 2 weeks, I've had a lot of phone calls in my work, people worrying about someone who has come back with post-traumatic stress syndrome. Please know if you have a loved one, you have a friend, a family member, or just someone you work with, and they're coming back and they're dealing with this. Just we as people that are standing in the wing can call and get information. You can call the VA. They have wonderful hotlines that you can call to get information. You can also go on the computer. There's some wonderful sites that will give support to veterans, but also to the families. Because when you come back, communications are really down for these guys. They go into cave time. They almost don't want to communicate. They're trying to get coping mechanisms, and unfortunately sometimes it's drug and alcohol, so they don't have to remember or have flashbacks because they're not ready to talk about what's went on. And I think that's, you have to honor where they are. So some people will want to talk about it. Some people will not want to talk about it. But you have to kind of find some fine line and some tools to deal with this. One of the things that I actually changed my perception was going to see the movie. It's out on DVD. You can go to Amazon.com and find out about it. But I know it's appearing at several film festivals, and that's the movie called This Is War. I happen to know some of the people that were in this movie. I've met the producers of this movie. And it's from the soldier's point of view. So you certainly can probably find out more about that by, I know, going to Amazon. And I think actually the website is thisiswar.com. I apologize if I don't have the right website. I did try to find the email. You might be able to find out more about it, too, through the www.therosettaproject.com. There is someone who was involved with the movie who could get you to the right website. This movie gave me the perspective of seeing how what kind of conditions they're in, what their rooms look like, how hot it gets there, some of their concerns, how they handle the stress, how they use humor to kind of deal with things. All these things that are coping tools, but also, really, I have to tell you, put you on red alert because you see, you do see bombing scenes, you do see how easy roadside bombs happen, so it does certainly upset you and get very emotional. I'm not going to say you don't. However, I think we need to be emotional and get involved as spiritual beings. One of the things I think is important is, too, prayer teams. We have a prayer team connected with our website at www.angelscribe.com. So if you have someone that's serving or you need support, please, please go to our website, put the person's name on our prayer team. I also think it's very important to learn in your own neighborhood or people around you who are coping with and how our single moms right now or single dads or grandmothers who are taking care of grandkids because the parents are gone. These are all ways we can help get involved. We can help by babysitting one night so the mother can go off and buy things for Christmas, get ready for the holidays. We can support them by donations, certainly through many, many different organizations. Or even just, taking the time to sit down and appreciate them. I really, as I traveled in the last few months, as I would see soldiers in uniform at the airports and stuff, I really stopped and bought them a cup of coffee. They kind of looked at me like I was a nut, but I said, oh, it's okay. I said, I want to say thank you, and if I can buy you, a cup of coffee or lunch, that's not very much for me to do, but at least it's what I can do in this moment for you. And just take a moment to thank them for their service. What I saw in the movie that I think really was important for me, because I am a very spiritual person and I don't necessarily agree or understand all the dynamics of why we are at war, because I just can't comprehend it all. And I don't think the people who are living and not fighting in Iraq, but that are the citizens of Iraq, exactly understand all the dynamics either. They hope that when the dust settles, everything will be much better for their lives and that they will have a new beginning and a renaissance, much like we did after the Civil War. The fight for independence, because in their eyes, much of this war is the fight for independence for them. But the thing that hit me the most when I saw this documentary was that the soldiers themselves, often in hours of just after a skirmish or after a fight, would think, what are we doing here? I don't get it. And I think that's very fair thought to have. It doesn't mean they were going to leave and not do their duty. It just means in that moment they were frustrated, they were afraid, they were angry. They have all these feelings, and that they're overwhelmed by being there. And sometimes how things play out do not make a lot of sense. So you could hear the frustration in their voice. And I think when they come home, they're still dealing with, what good did my being there really do? Here we are, we're still X amount of time later, still in the war. Things are still, you know, feeling quite disrupted. And I, as an individual, may not be able to understand what my purpose and what I did there, how did it make a difference? Because you want to come home and understand that what you do makes has a purpose. I mean, all of us, you know, everything that we choose to do, all of our actions and reactions, we hope is making a difference in the world in some way. What we don't understand often with this experience of war and these young men and women coming back is they are grieving. They're grieving many things. They're grieving, A, their innocence of being, most of them are very young. I think they're from 20 or 18, probably 19, to, you know, 40 or 50, 40, I think 6 or something. Someone told me that the ages range between there. But most of the ones I saw in this movie and most of the ones I've seen are in their 20s, maybe late 30s. So they're very young individuals, most of them, often many of them would just marry, just starting their family, so they've been away often while their first child has been born. So it's very difficult situations. So they're grieving many things. They're grieving the lost time of from their marriage, from their being a new father or mother. They're also grieving their innocence being lost and having to face something that is, for most people, would be very traumatic. I don't think anyone who has not experienced seeing someone die in front of them can judge how they would react or not react. So there's a lot of grief around that whole situation. I think there's also grief around their belief systems being shaken. Many, many of these people have strong religious belief systems that have been shaken. The grief of the time away from everything that is, quote-unquote, normal. Then when they come home, they're grieving from being then taken out of an environment that has become their norm. And it's interesting how fast, you know, when you talk to people who do counseling, different things, you find out that when someone's in a very traumatic situation, it takes something like, I think someone said, 24 to 48 hours that the sort of Helsinki syndrome starts coming in, you know, where the captives start of identifying with the people who captured them. But I think when the guys, ladies and gentlemen are in the service, they so start identifying with their brigade, their troop, their whole units, and that becomes the way of life, and you know, orders are orders. You are under such a different regime that extended family becomes so much of your 24-hour, you eat with them, you sleep with them, you, you know, are in action with them. So your life is very tied to them, and the knee-jerk reactions that happen in the red alert situations. And so there's a lot of grief when you're torn from that family and that environment, and then are kind of, you know, told to go home and have a nice life and pick up the shards of your life. Now, I know that most people are supposed to be able to come back and, you know, come back to their jobs, but I know that many of them have come back and there's no job there. And so they're beginning a new beginning. They're struggling with their finances. I think a lot of people, including me, unfortunately, I was under the delusion that our government was making sure that they got their paychecks on a very timely basis and there were no difficulties, and so there was no lag time, and they had, you know, some abundance when they came home to help support them so they could have some time to reintegrate into society. That, unfortunately, is not what I found out. Often, sometimes, their wages are owed to them for 5 to 7 months, in some cases longer. So it makes it difficult for them to come back and pick up their pieces. Most of them are scrambling, trying to get their finances squared away. The other thing that I think happens, and we found this in World War II, is people move on. People move on in their lives while these guys are gone for 18 months, which is, you know, almost 2 years. Pretend you fell asleep and you woke up 2 years later, and you were plopped back down in your environment and your family and everything. What's happened? A lot of your friends have gotten married, moved on. People have passed away. Sometimes some people have lost their parents or our friends to different kinds of accidents, to just life in general, disease. And so their life has changed. They come back. And actually, in 2 years, if you even just look around your environment, the styles of music change. Every part of our environment changes in 2 years. So what was popular when you went over there maybe is not popular now. You know, it's amazing, because when you're in it, you're not noticing it. But the remarkable things that happen in just 1 year of your life, or 6 months, much less 18 months of your life. So again, if anyone has ideas, some ideas of how to help the people that are coming back from these situations, or the people that are in the situation of the war in Iraq, please call me at 1-877-876-5227. Another thing that I think is very, very a nice idea, in some of the small towns, what they are doing just before the holiday is they take half a page in a small town, and they have people write in little blurbs about people who are in the service. They get the information from the National Guards, and they write, you know, little, we miss you from, you know, Jim's Hardware, blah, 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 blah. Can't wait till you get back. They do basically, I love you, I miss you, statements. Kids get to write in. I mean, everybody gets to write in and do this half page of remembrance. And then the newspaper, people donate money, and the newspaper sends them off to the people who are serving in their units. So they have a hometown paper to read. One of my friends, actually Mary Ellen, Angel Scribe, she did that. She actually knew someone who had worked at the paper who was in the service and made sure that they got the hometown paper every week, I think it came out every week. And that's important, because when you're away, you want to see who's married. You want to see what's going on in your hometown. So ideas like that are certainly wonderful, wonderful ideas. The other thing I think is very, very important for us as spiritual people is to take the time to pray. And I don't think you have to be part of a prayer team. You know, I think it's very important to learn to do individual prayer. And people always ask me, Tara, what is it? What do you mean by prayer? And I'm not real orthodox, I guess. I'm just, for me, it's sitting down, getting in that space and saying, Dear God, Goddess, all that is, Divine Spirit, in this moment, I ask that you embrace. And then I start talking about the person or to the person sometimes. But like for me, in that moment, God's in my cosmic office with me. And I'm putting that person in God's hands, in the hands of the angels, so that there's no separation, that we can do that, because everything is in energy. And as we pray and send that energy out, it is received. Everyone's open to healing and to feeling safe. I also think one of the books that I think is a very good book to send to someone who is in the service, and that is Healing Grief by James Van Praagh. You've heard me talk about this. It really is about loss of loved ones, but it's really also about the loss of a lot of things. We grieve for the loss of lots of things. We grieve for divorces. We grieve for death. We grieve for a loss of a job, loss of a chance of education. We grieve over a lot of things. We are actually very interesting human beings that we get in this whole little cycle where we're caught up in the grieving process for many, many things. Our innocence, even, I think we grieve for that. And the frustration around not knowing sometimes even what to do. I think we feel most loss, most grief, most confusion when we absolutely really don't know who we are anymore and we don't know what we want. When I'm working with clients and I say, make a list of who you are today, what do you want, what don't you want, what are you not willing to change, I'll hear so many times, Chair, I don't know what I want. I said, well, then start with what you don't want. Because when you can list what you don't want, pretty soon you find out what you do want. It's a process of self-inventory. One of the techniques that I've been using as I've been working with some of these post-traumatic stress syndrome soldiers is that very technique of taking inventory. And they're very honest, like, I don't know who I am anymore. I said, well, let's start with who you think you are or who you were before you left. And in families, we can do that. You got to be really careful not to overwhelm them with questions. But sometimes just asking them, what do you want to do today? How do you feel in this moment? How can I help? And they may say to you, you know what, I don't know. I don't know what you can help me with. And I think you have to be okay with that. And I think it's okay to say, you know, that's all right. If in this moment you don't know what you want to do, you don't know whether you want to, you know, work on your car or not, that you're in emotional pain. I think that's one thing we have to talk about, too, with them, is that it's okay to have emotional pain as long as it doesn't suck you under and you become suicidal or you get trapped in drugs and alcohol. It's so easy in America to run to our medicine cabinets, whether prescribed or not, I hate to say that, and get sucked under, especially so much now in the street drugs that are available. And so as we can help those people to know that someone's there, that they're loved, that they're worthy of love, that they can talk to you about things, I think that's one thing that I've found with the guys is that they feel like they can no longer talk to any of their friends. They don't have a common ground. They don't feel like they can talk to their family about this horrendous stuff. And so they have no place to go. They're sort of backed in a corner. And one of the things I think it's okay for us as spiritual friends, that means mothers, fathers, girlfriends, boyfriends, wives, husbands, lovers, and just acquaintances, is to say when they're in a bad day, to just go and sit with them and sometimes not say anything. Because just by the act of sitting, you know, I'll hang with you. I'll hang out with you until you want to say something. And if you don't want to say something, fine. And just be. Also, sometimes just to say, you know, I absolutely could never fathom where you are at this moment because I don't have any of the experiences that you've had. But I love you enough to be there for you. I love you enough to listen or be silent or to go on this journey with you, whatever it looks like. And I think it's very hard because when the people come home, if they're in relationships, often role reversal has happened. If the guy has gone, the woman has had to become, you know, the decision maker and figure things out. And so when the guy comes back, the woman's still in that independent phase. There's still time, you know, doing everything. And so the man becomes feeling a little useless and not figuring out where to stand. And in the other side of that, if the husband has been here and the wife is in the service or the girlfriend and they have children, all of a sudden the children want dad or the significant other, and they're not calling mommy, mommy. You know, moms become this foreign object in a way. And so, of course, now the mother's grieving the abandonment of the kids. And the father's going, I just wish that the little one would take you for a few minutes. And yet, also is struggling with, now I don't want to be abandoned either. I finally built up this new relationship with the kids. So there's all these inner dichotomies that seem to go on with people who have been in this place. I really hope that we as a spiritual community and networking and family can be a different support system than the World War II veterans had and the Vietnam veterans had when they came back, because it should not take 50 years or more for people to get help, to get support. We don't want this wonderful, incredible, intelligent next generation to become the street people of tomorrow because the system abandoned them. And so it's very important, find out in your local community what kind of resources they have for the post-traumatic stress syndrome, for even the support of veterans in any way. Volunteer at your veteran hospitals. You know, Danny and Brinkley's Light Brigade is one of the most amazing groups that I have ever been introduced to. Danny Brinkley was the man who wrote Saved by the Light, who was struck by lightning. And he started a group that I think was originally called the Light Brigade, and then they changed the name to it, and I hope I think of it in a minute, trained in hospice. He started training people in hospice, because he was very shocked that something like every 15 minutes an American veteran was dying in veteran hospitals alone and forgotten. And when I first heard him talk about that, my heart just stood still. And I knew in that moment I had to somehow get involved. So I did go take the hospice training, and I have been working for several years. Sometimes it's on again and off again, I'll admit that. But if you have time, if you have any time at all to volunteer and help with hospice, help with the Veterans Hospital, it's a very important thing. It's as simple as going and writing a letter for someone, reading a book, going in and just talking to someone and say, tell me your life story, who are you? Tell me about yourself. That's really how I started. I can remember the first time I walked in, I said, oh, Spirit, you sent the wrong girl. Oh, God, I don't know what I'm going to do here. You know, I was I had nothing in common with these people. I was terrified. I thought, oh, man, that training was not enough. I just don't know what I'm going to do. So I went in, I was in the hall, and I remember praying, dear Spirit, Dom, you better show up. You better help me with this. Oh, my God, you know. Bring me some extra angels. I don't know even how to break the ice. And about that time, a gentleman rolled up to me who was missing his legs and he was in a wheelchair. And he said, what you doing here? What are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. And I said, well, I said, I'm here. I said, I came to find out what this world is like. And he says, well, you don't know anything about the world. And I said, you're right. I don't know anything about the world. Why don't you tell me? Tell me about your world. Tell me about your life and who you are. And how you came to be here this day, in this moment. And he said, you really don't want to hear my life story. And I said, yeah, I think I do. I said, because I want to understand what we're doing for our veterans, what we've done right, what we've done wrong. And that started an incredible, engaging conversation. And I learned a lot. I learned, A, that I was strong enough to be there in that moment. And I learned that that man got a lot of healing by telling me, having someone who would listen to his story, an incredible, incredible story. And there were many, many people like that, men and women. I think people don't think of women as much in World War II, and yet there was a lot of women that served in World War II that are in veterans' hospitals. Certainly there are more men than women in that particular time period, but truly going to a veteran hospital and getting the opportunity to interact and just let someone tell you their life story, you know, one thing you come away with is humbleness and love, because you learn a lot about the world of the actions that happened during the war, how that changed that person's life, how it changed all the people they know's life, and is still interacting and changing lives in this moment. We have too many walking wounded in the world, not just the soldiers that served, but their families, their friends, parents. I've had many, many mothers and fathers call me asking, Atira, how do I get in? How do I help? And it's not just the mental wounding. We certainly have a large number of people who have been physically injured in this war. When you see the DVD or the movie This Is War, which is touring in the United States, it was in Florida. It's at different film festivals, so look in your local paper and see if it's in a film festival near you. The other thing that I found amazing is the stories of heroes. And I tell you, in this particular documentary, there's a man who is injured, but terribly injured. Both legs were lost. But he absolutely had no thought of himself. He was the leader of the group, absolutely made sure all his people pulled his people out and stuff, even with no legs, and didn't realize he was really wounded until he got people out, pulled people out, and then he went to, of course, try and get out himself and realized, oops, I'm in trouble here. But even when he knew he was sent to the States, I think sent to Bethesda, Maryland, a big hospital there, and found out his group, his platoon, or whatever you call it, I'm sorry, platoon, I think, rather than brigade, platoon was coming home, and he wanted to be there to greet his boys, his people. He felt that was so important that he left the hospital and got on a plane and flew back so he could be there when his boys came home, his family came home. And so when you hear stories like that, you hear my voice cracking, sorry, the will and the family dynamics that form with these people while they're over there, you know that it's so amazing and important. I really actually advocate, I really was thinking about that. You know, remember, you know, probably all of you are too young to know this, but, and I wouldn't know this, of course, this is my mother's generation, you know. But I can remember when I was younger and my brothers were involved in Boy Scouts and or Civil Air Patrol. But basically you had sort of like den mothers and fathers. You know, I think that's wonderful if you can, as a group or a church or an organization, you know, adopt a platoon. Why not, guys? You know, become their den mother or father or wisdom keeper, grandfather type person. I think that one thing that has happened in America that I see that is not a good thing is we have lost that generational connection sometimes. It used to be and I can remember when I was a kid, everybody went to my grandmother's house when I was younger, and my dad was one of 13 kids, so, you know, there was a lot of people, and there was this closeness, and at least twice a year you would go to my grandma's house, and all the family would be there, and, you know, it would be like a big family reunion. Well, as the matriarchs in our family started passing away and people got caught up with their own kids, what has happened, of course, unfortunately, is the traditions of being close to family. You know, it used to be you didn't move that far away. You usually stayed in the same state. Well, with jobs and things nowadays, people, you know, children move all over the United States and sometimes all over the world for jobs, and so the distance becomes... The family ties are a little more disorientated and removed. And as I was taking a pastoral skills class, they were talking about even how it used to be you kept grandparents at home in the family unit and you didn't put them in nursing homes and things. And even that traditions have changed. So the dynamics of the family have changed a little bit. So during this time, you know, think about maybe expanding your spiritual family. One thing that for me has been very important, as of course many of my listeners and people know, that my mother had me at 43, so I lost both of my parents when I was in my 20s. So my family shrank pretty fast. So I started collecting older people with wisdom as extended adopted moms and dads, and certainly extended adopted grandparents. And so I was very blessed by making a conscious choice to, you know, not just grieve the loss, but choose to have other people fill those some of those very strategic and important places in our life. And I've always been a very big believer that sometimes we like our spiritual family by choice better than we like the ones we came in with. And so expand your spiritual family, you know, to include some of these people who have served our country, who are serving our country. Get together, perhaps, even in your family, and say, rather than exchange all the gifts that we usually do, you know, certainly don't forget your little ones, because they got to have all that stuff, you know, those big things and exciting stuff under the tree. But perhaps say, let's you know, give up one gift each this year and put that money in. Let's do something for a platoon or a group over there, you know, write one person in that platoon and say, listen, if we could do a group gig here, what would it be good? What would be good? And how many people? You know, I hate to say, I don't even know how many people are in a platoon. I might be telling you to take care of 200 people, but I hope not. But find out how you can be absolutely an earth angel to someone here whose family is serving over there. Be supportive. Remember to ask about people. I think sometimes parents really get frustrated because people don't say, well, how is your son or how is your daughter? Have you heard from him? Can you tell me the news? You know, I think that it's really important for us. In small towns, I notice this much more. If you remember In A Wonderful Life, everybody knows everybody in a small town. We've kind of lost that as we've got into the bigger cities and the communities have sprawled in that. So I think it's important, if you know somebody at work whose son's in the service or daughter's in the service, ask, how are they? What do they need? Could I give you something to send in the next package? Can I write a note? You know, become part of the extended family. If some of your employees have been, I know in Mary Ellen's small town, a lot of their people that were professional people, some of the dentists, some of the masseuses, the chiropractors, different you know, people who had businesses in their town have been sent. So it's affected the dental practice, the things like that. You know, so as a community, if your dentist, if your doctor, if your whoever, you know, that's your professional, has been called as part of the call up for this war, you know, remember to send him a note. Remember to let him know that you still think of him, you still have him in your consciousness. So again, if you have some ideas, I'm hoping someone will call in, because I know you all have great ideas out there. Call in and share your ideas of how you can send some spiritual love and nurturing to someone in the service. Again, the number is 1-877-876-5227. Because I know a lot of you have had children over there. I think it's very important to not just to send emails. I know that emails are a big thing, but I also know that they don't always get time on the email computers over there. I know they have a lot of trouble with their email computers over there, because in case you hadn't noticed, it's a real desert place, and sand and electronics don't always work. My understanding is also phone cards, international phone cards. Somebody told me that you can give them some kind of international phone card. I don't know about this, so please try and connect with someone who's in the military. Even walking into a recruiting station for the services, that's Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, and asking them how to get involved is a really good thing. Certainly Toys for Tots is always a good way to get involved for the holiday seasons. But just asking in your community, I don't think there is one community anywhere that you cannot find someone in need. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Julia. How are you?
I'm fine. Hi, Julia.
I'm
not alone. Yay!
Yeah. I had gotten an email about this topic recently. It was going around to send cards or packages to, mm-hmm. like, any wounded soldier or any soldier type of deal.
Uh-huh.
And they were saying to send it to, like, the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland.
Wow.
And I actually went on the website, and they say from their own personal website that do not do that. So if you're going to, you know, take the time and make the effort to do it, just, you know,
really find out it's a legit one.
Find out,
yeah,
you
thank
know.
You. Yeah, it's really important to find out that there are legit websites. Please do
yeah.
that. Yeah, absolutely. the best way is to find someone you know.
Yeah.
You know, like in your community. School teachers are great resources, guys. Go to your local school because often they'll know whose father or mother are in service, and you can get in. That way they'll actually send a note home to whoever's, you know, at home and get information. How can we help? Because sometimes it's as easy as buying and helping the kids. The kids are kind of the forgotten ones in this, you know, because they're in school. They still need school supplies, guys, and I'm telling you, you can't get a kid in school under $50. It takes at least that for the backpacks. Did you leave me?
No, I'm listening. I don't want to interrupt.
No, that's good. So, yeah, please make sure it's a legit, because I do know that there were some frauds, unfortunately, especially with the Internet. We do hear about frauds. Other ideas?
I know I live in Maryland, and there are a lot of military bases around. So, I mean, if you're in an area, or even if they have, like, recruiting offices, you can go and, you know, if they take the time to research it and find a specific place or a specific troop or battalion or platoon or whatever, you know, as long as they have a specific, but if they just address it to, you know, a soldier or a wounded soldier, it won't be delivered at all,
right,
no matter where they're sending it to.
Right, I think that's a very good point because of security in America.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you definitely are going to want to send it to 1-800-ANYBODY.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So it's really a good idea to really try and work within your community. I do know that they do have a website called Adopt a Soldier that is a legit website that I have done a little bit of research on. But I have not gotten back all the information that I would like to have before I, you know, use that particular website. But certainly do research. It's so, so important.
Well, even other ways that people can get involved is like the scouts. You know, get a hold of like the scout leaders and make one of their community service projects to do a project, you know, that they can send to a soldier or something like that.
I think that's really good because truly in the Scouts, the Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, just 4-H, all of those kinds of clubs need projects to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to them with an idea, often they'll be able to find somebody really, and people who run those kinds of organizations, honest to God, bless their hearts, they are very good at connecting and coordinating things. And so really, truly, it's a great way, and everybody wins because you're teaching responsibility, you know, you're giving people lots to do, the kids, and you're changing other people's lives. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it so much.
Sure. And one more thing as far as an idea, if you wanted to take it to the next level from the scouting, like the kids, a lot of us have kids in college that are into sororities and fraternities.
Absolutely.
I mean, they could do something like that as well because a lot of that is, you know, community service type things. So,
That's a great idea.
You can reach out in so many ways.
That is so wonderful. Thank you, because I would forget them. And you know what? Those are the next generation, unfortunately, that might be called up.
Yeah.
Some of those college kids. So I think it's wonderful that the sororities and other organizations, because there's even like all kinds of clubs within colleges that we don't even think about, you know, that can really interact and send. And one of the other things I really want to say before my time's up is books. I have to tell you, one of the things my friend said that, because I was really big on sending spiritual books, you know, all different kinds. I mean, it would be, you know, a huge range of gamut.
Yeah.
And my friend said that I became the base library.
Yeah,
and,
well,
and they
a great
leave
way
them
to
there.
Recycle, too.
Yeah, they leave them there, and then everybody can just go bum a book whenever.
Yeah.
Which, so, don't necessarily throw away that, you know, latest Harry Potter or whatever you just read. You know, it certainly can go. And you can do priority mail, you know, everything you can fit in a box for, I think, like $13. It's a good deal to the P.O. boxes. So there's lots and lots of ways. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks
Take
for
care.
Listening, darling.
Thank you.
Blessings. I hope that we at this time together has really opened your heart and mind to become involved in your community just as a friend, a loved one, and just as someone who can say a prayer. Take that moment every night. I've been actually praying since September 11th. Spirit asked me to do that, and it's my conscious choice that I do prayer every day for the for the whole situation. We are each a candle, and together we make the light of the world so much brighter. So until we talk again, I'm hoping next week to have something on orbs, and the following week a healer, Steve Herman, from Florida, to come on the air. So we have some new exciting shows coming up. So until we talk again, remember to let your light shine, to light your way and the way for others, and to stay wrapped in the wings of angels.